Welcome to my Blog Talk Radio show, Love Your Music. I'm your host, Margot Joy Denader, and I'm a creative life balance coach, singer-songwriter, and the author of a book titled The Art of Living a Life You Love. I'm happy to have Michelle Gordon back as my guest today. 10 years ago, Michelle Gordon embarked on her writing career with absolutely no idea where it was going to take her. Although she had known from a young age that she wanted to be an author, it wasn't until April 2009 that she began to write her first novel. And then 2 months later, the Earth Angel Training Academy was born. Join us for a conversation about writing books, publishing them, the past 10 years, what's new in the present, and what the future can be like when you do what you love for a living. Hello, Michelle. Are you there?
I'm here. Hi.
I am so happy to have you back on the show today. You are one of my favorite authors, one of my favorite guests, and I just love that you are living your music in such a variety of ways, and writing books being the main one, but, you know, it's not the only one. And looking forward to it. And also, before I lose track of time and forget to tell you, my brother Dwayne, my husband Dudley, and my son Xander all want to say hello to you.
Hi, everybody.
I just can't even believe that it was 3 years ago in July that I first met you, I believe, wasn't it? Where you were here in the United States.
I was in Sedona at the time, yeah. Yeah, and I had to steal someone's phone to make the call to the radio show. I didn't realize I couldn't do it online, so I was just like, oh no, I've got to steal somebody's phone out there. So that was quite funny. Yeah, but I was in Sedona at the time, doing a tour with the Earth Angel Training Academy, which at the time it was the 5-year anniversary of the publication of the book. So we were doing a little tour. So yeah, it was 2016.
Yeah, and I had you on the show, and Xander actually got to meet you in person. And
yeah,
thank you so much for the book. I love the one that you gave him that where you signed it inside. That's just so sweet of you. And I love this whole thing about Earth Angels. It really resonates with me, and I want you to go back in time 10 years ago. And tell us a little bit about your journey, though, of writing the first Earth Angel Academy book and how all that got started. Tell us what it was like.
Well, I had just spent 10 months in New York. I was living there and working as an au pair in Westchester County. And during that 10 months, I had read pretty much every spiritual novel, nonfiction, you name it. I had worked my way through Westchester Library, and they had a huge selection. So I had read a lot. and I'd also met my favorite author, Neil Donald Walsh. I'd met him in New York City when he was doing a talk there. And so after reading just as much as humanly possible about all different spiritual subjects, I'd come across the idea of Earth Angels a couple of years before that. So 2007 was when I first came across the idea of Earth Angels, and also realized that I was one and some of my friends were Earth Angels. And so after reading all of these books and really thinking it's time that I actually got writing, because I'd always wanted to write books, and I didn't have the confidence to think that I could actually write a whole book. You know, I didn't think I had the attention span. I didn't think I had it in me somehow. And it was, I remember what I went into the city one day, and I went to the Virgin Megastore in Times Square, which was closing down at the time. Mm-hmm. And I picked up a book called No Plot, No Problem by Chris Beatty. And in it,
say that again, I didn't catch what it was called.
Sorry, it's called No Plot, No Problem. And it's by Chris Beatty, and he founded NaNoWriMo. So NaNoWriMo stands for National Novel Writing Month, and the concept was very simply, you write 50,000 words, so you write a book, essentially, in a month, in 30 days. And I loved the idea. I thought that it was just brilliant, you know, really short deadline, you know, crazy amount of words, and you didn't plot anything, you didn't figure it all out beforehand, you just picked an idea and just ran with it. And for some reason, it just clicked with me, and I loved the idea. So on the day that I was flying back from New York to England, I was sat in JFK Airport, and I started writing the Earth Angel Training Academy. And I wrote the first 800 or 900 words in my notebook longhand while sitting in JFK.
Wow.
All I'd done was, so I'd only got the book the week before, and I literally jotted down a few ideas for the academy. And to be honest, a lot of the ideas I jotted down didn't even make it into the book, because once I started writing, it just took over. The characters just took me on the journey with them, and I really had no idea where it was going or what was going to happen or how long it was going to be or anything. And I definitely had no idea whatsoever that it was going to turn into a series of 10 books. At the time, it was just, the basic concept was, okay, if Earth Angels exist, and there are angels and fairies and mer people and star people who are on Earth now as humans, but they came from another planet or realm, you know, before that, you know, they must have had some kind of training. They must have had some kind of help before they came into human bodies to actually know what it was going to be like. You know, it felt too cruel for them to just suddenly become human and not know what it was like to have a human body, to be able to talk, to be able to walk. I mean, you know, a lot of these beings didn't have physical bodies. They didn't have legs, or they didn't have, you know what I mean? It just seemed like there must have been some kind of help that they had beforehand. And that was it. That was the whole concept that I had for the book. And yeah, I started writing it on the 1st of April, 2009, as I was flying back. And then I finished it about 2 months later. I think it was the 2nd of June, I finished the story. So it took me 2 months to write 100,000 words.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
I was shocked. I was really shocked, because I genuinely didn't think I would be able to do it. I didn't think I'd be able to write that much. The longest story I'd written before then was heaven.com, which is only 18,000 words. So it shocked me, but I realized that I'd found my method, which is one of the topics, as you know, in the Unicorn book, which is really about, you know, find your method, find what works for you, figure out what creative process makes you tick, and then use it. Don't worry if everybody thinks it's crazy. Just do what works for you.
Well, you know, you're so right. I mean, not the same thing works for everyone. And I remember it was when Xander was a baby, I'd always loved books, and I'd always wanted to write one someday. And I remember when he was a baby, feeding him his bottle and thinking, I really need to write a book. And I wanted to write a novel, but then I thought, you know, I really need to write first about all the personal development that I've learned about over the years, you know, and write a nonfiction book first. And so then I started taking some notes on ideas and things, and, you know, didn't really get into it until it was actually after 9/11. That whole thing really just made me go, oh my gosh. And we had seen Wayne Dyer at Book Passage on the 7th of September that year, and just before 9/11. And while we were waiting for him to do his talk, there was a newsletter at the bookstore about this woman had two classes, Is There a Book in You and You Can Complete That Book. And I thought, you know, I know there's a book in me, I just can't complete it. So I read that one, his book, Spiritual Solution to Every Problem, and then I also read Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway of Susan Jeffers during that time. And I thought, you know, I'm going to feel the fear and do it anyway and sign up for this writing class, which I was absolutely terrified to do, because I'd never taken a writing class. I didn't think that I could do it. I just didn't believe I could do it. And and I mean, but she had us, actually, this was great. You'll love this, Michelle. She had us the first night of class, she had us draw our inner critic. And I don't even want to draw it. I'm not into art, you know, and I draw this kind of stick figure with a mean look on its face, you know. And she says, okay, now the inner critics all have to go sit outside the class for the next 6 weeks. And, you know, I mean, it takes sometimes a certain way. And I was a mom. Xander was 11 at the time, going on 12. and I was going to write a book about color, and he goes, but Mom, I thought you were writing a book that was for me too. And I thought, you know, then it took me back to, oh yeah, I wanted to write a book about what's helped me love my life and live my music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, but I mean, for me it was the opposite. Instead of it being a quick thing, it was like showing up each morning after my morning pages, write a few as much as I could and whenever
mm-hmm.
I could. And so it took me a long time, but I was enjoying the journey so much that it took me forever. <You know?
laughs>
And I ended up self-publishing
the
first.
Love it too much.
Yeah, I ended up, well, I gave him a rough draft of it for his eighth grade graduation. And then for, let's see, was in May of 2009, while he was in his first year of college, I self-published it the first time. And
mm-hmm.
And since then, in the 2013, I republished it through Balboa Press. But, you know, with revising it and editing it, and, you know, once you start looking at it, you're going, oh, okay, well, I can make this better. But, yeah, there's,
yeah.
like, both versions of what you can do when you look back to 10 years ago. I love that
mm-hmm.
question. What are you glad you did 10 years ago? And I'm so glad that I self-published it 10 years ago. I'm so glad that you wrote your book 10 years ago. And
yeah,
so
well,
tell us what happened next. What happened next after you gotten the book done?
Well, nothing much for a couple of years. because, well, it's funny, I did give it to a few people and they read it, including my editor and best friend of over 25 years. And you know, the people really liked it. And the main kind of question that came back was, what happens next? And I'm like, well, isn't it obvious? You know, I mean, it does have a little 25 years later kind of, you know, scene at the end. And I thought, well, it's kind of obvious, you know, it's of course, you know, everybody can figure out what happens next. And
mm-hmm.
there was something that kind of made me a little bit curious. So in 2010, yeah,
mm-hmm.
in December 2010, well, November 2010, I signed up to NaNoWriMo again, and I wrote, I started writing the sequel, the, you know, the second book, which was The Earth Angel Awakening. And
mm-hmm.
I had this idea of what was going to happen next, and then when I started writing, that was not what happened. Because as I was writing, like, a whole different story came through, because things had shifted in my own life, and the books, as well as being kind of partly channeled, they were also reflecting what was going on in my own life as well. So because my own life had shifted, the book then shifted. And yeah, and I was really surprised by what came through. And the twists that book two takes, you know, took me by surprise as much as the readers. And yeah, so I wrote the second book, and it wasn't until after I'd written the second one that I started thinking about publishing. I mean, I have to admit, at this point, I hadn't really...
So you
also written another
the heaven.com one yet? That one was still just one that you had
heaven.com,
written?
Heaven.com, I did sort of, I self-published it just literally did a few hard copies just because I wanted to see it in book form. I self-published that in 2007, so that was kind of going back even before that. And but when I wrote The Academy, I didn't have it in mind to publish it myself. That wasn't, I just wanted to write it. You know, I wasn't even thinking about publishing. I wasn't thinking about what to do with it. I just needed to get the story down.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so I'd written The Academy, The Doorway to Pam, because I wrote that in the middle as well. And I wrote The Earth Angel Awakening before I even started thinking about the publishing side of things. And in the beginning of 2011, I remember I did send out a few, was it, in 2010, that's right, before I wrote The Awakening, I did send out a few queries to a few publishers, and I basically got bored waiting for them to come back to me, and then by the beginning of 2011, I thought, this is crazy, I'm just going to do it myself. I published heaven.com, I did okay with that, so let's give this a go, and I gave myself 6 months to get it published by the 1st of July 2011. And that's what I did. And it did take me those 6 months to get it formatted and to cover. And yeah, I published it and released it on 1st of July 2011. And then after that, my aim was to publish two books a year. And pretty much managed to do that. Some years it was one, some years it was three, you know, but yeah, now it's 16 books are out, and I do plan to, you know, get more books out this year. But it was, yeah, it was just taking that first step of just getting the story down. And I think now, especially, because obviously this was going back before Kindle was Kindle around then? I can't even think. I know print on demand barely started.
I can't remember.
I think Kindle was just in its very kind of beginning stages at that point. And so self-publishing was still a little bit stigmatized. It was still a bit of a weird concept. People still thought it was vanity publishing. And so, yeah, now when people go to write a book, because that's what they want to do, all they're worried about is how they're going to publish it and what reviews they're going to get and how much money they're going to make from it. And I think that kind of kills the magic a little bit because, you know, when I wrote The Academy, it was just for the pure need to tell a story.
What I would say about that is I don't think it kills it a little bit. I think that I remember there was this one woman that was in my writing class with Leslie, that first class, and you know, she was like always, that was her whole motivation. She wanted to do it to make a whole lot of money, you know, and for me, it was never about the money. And maybe that's not a good thing either necessarily, but I mean, it was because it was just something I felt I had to do. And it sounds like that's sort of what happened with you too, but I have to say that with your book, when John had me read it and asked me to have you on my show the first time back in 2016, he had given me the copy of it, and I thought, you know, this sounds interesting, but I don't know, you know, and I started reading it, and I'm going, wow, this is really out there and really different, and then I'm thinking, you know, the more I get into it, the more I'm getting curious what's going to happen next and thinking about how creative it is and how much fun the characters are. And then by the time I finish the book, it's like you said, I wanted to go, okay, what happens next? So I ended up getting the second book and the third book and the fourth book, and I can't believe I've read all 10 of them.
I started rereading them recently, actually, because I started a little book club on Facebook, and so I've been rereading them kind of along with everybody else, and I've just finished the third book, and I'm a little bit behind, actually. I should be on the fourth one by now, but to be honest, it surprises me reading it back, because obviously it's been a while now since I actually read any of them, and there's so much of it I just don't remember. I genuinely just have no recollection of it whatsoever. And it amazes me that every time I do kind of pick one up and read through it, I get something completely different from it every time. I see different things in it and in the story. And that's kind of what tells me that the story was not of my own creation. The story like came through and needed to be told. And that's what I love. That's the magic that I love about writing and about, you know, creating books.
Well, see, that you were connected with your inner being, with source energy, the great artist, the great creator, whoever, the universe, whatever you want to call
it. My muse.
versus being, you know, the people who are doing it just because they want to be famous or have a lot of money, which that's a real ridiculous idea because it's not a way to get rich to write books. But unless you're somebody like Nora Roberts, maybe, who writes lots of novels.
I think
millions of novels. But
genres that you will make money on. And I have to admit, you know, I've picked the genre of like, you know, spiritual and visionary fiction. It's not exactly a huge genre. You know, it's not romance or thrillers or crime novels. But again, that's because I genuinely, I just wrote what I had to write. And that's what came out. And I wasn't thinking about publishing or making money or anything. And I think when I was publishing them, I didn't want to be just some like flash in the pan, you know, quick sort of success story. I want to write my whole life. This is my thing. This is why I'm here. This is what I do. So for me, you know, taking their time to reach people and to get out in the world and do what they're supposed to do doesn't really matter because I'm going to keep writing them anyway and I'm going to keep publishing. And it, you know, it's a lifelong thing, and it's something that I don't mind if it's a slow burner.
Exactly. I feel, yeah,
you know,
I feel the same way.
Quick scheme.
Yeah, I feel the same way about my book, but also about the music that Dudley and I create together and with Xander and
mm-hmm.
living our music. And for us is both, well, for me, it was writing the book, it's doing the show, being Xander's mom, and
yeah.
Being part of West Coast Songwriters and singing our songs together and, you know, all of that, which, you know, it gives you so much joy, and that spills out
yeah.
into the rest of your life. And so, I mean, so many people, I see so many people wanting, going, oh, what's my purpose? What's my purpose? Like, it's going to be your job. And
yeah.
it's going to be one thing, and it's going to be such an incredible purpose that people are going to pay you lots of money to do it or something.
Yeah.
You know? But
which
I think we all have more than one purpose, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And also I think we do, on a certain level, we do choose our purpose. And I feel like if people don't know what their purpose is, it's like, well, just pick something. You know, pick
yeah.
something, give it a try, see how it feels. And you might discover through that what your purpose, you know, should be, because you're like, oh, well, actually, no, I didn't like that, but I like that bit. And I mean, you know, even though writing books is my thing, I've created Earth Angel TV on my YouTube channel, and I love making videos. You know, I love, you know, editing them. There's something, I don't know why I love editing videos, but, you know, I like creating the little intros, and, you know, I love all of that kind of thing. So, you know, writing books is just a part of it, and it's just something, and it's only something that I do, you know, a couple of times a year. I don't write every single day. I write for like maybe a month or two out of a year. The rest of the time I'm working on all sorts of other things. I'm helping other people to publish their books. And in fact, my editor and I, we're starting a new publishing paradigm this year, where we are combining like the best bits of traditional and indie publishing to publish other authors. I'm constantly starting new projects and trying new things, and the experiences of all of those things will hopefully make my books, you know, even better, because obviously I can bring that into my books as well. So, yeah, I think as long as, like you said, you're having fun and you're enjoying yourself, and it really does bring you, you know, satisfaction and contentment, the money part is really kind of just a nice side effect when it goes well.
back during my 20s, you know, there was a lot of books about do what you love for a living, which I had put one of the slides I had put in the slideshow is the
mm-hmm.
do what you love
yeah.
of yours from your Earth Angel TV. And the thing is that, you know, sometimes it doesn't mean that you're going to do just one thing, especially if you're doing
yeah.
creative things. A lot of times, A, you can't make all the money in that one creative thing. But the other reason, if you're creative, you like doing a variety of things. So you would go crazy
yeah.
if all you did was do the exact same thing every day. So
there are some creatives that can do that. And I'm kind of in awe of the people that just have the one craft that they hone and that they're really amazing at and they master. But I've always been eclectic. You know, I'm constantly trying out new crafts and new things, and I keep collecting projects and you know, stuff like it's going out of date. I can't help it. I'm like, ooh, shall I sew tonight? Shall I knit? Shall I crochet? Shall I stick some glue on something? You know, I love playing with things, and I love exploring things. And, you know, I also love reading and watching movies. I'm a complete movie buff. I love movies.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, these days it's all TV shows as well. So like there's so many TV shows I love binging on, and so there's just so many different things to experience and explore. And I wouldn't want to be kind of limited to just being a writer, because I want to try all different things. And I think, you know, there's nothing kind of wrong with that. I think, you know, we've been kind of sort of programmed to think that we should just choose one thing to do for the rest of our lives, and it's our living and it's our career and it's everything. And I don't think that really applies anymore. I think people are having a more diverse array of hobbies and skills and talents and things that they're utilizing. And I saw a funny meme earlier actually that said, you know, you can no longer just be a writer, you have to be a motivational speaker and a social media manager, and it was just like listed all these things that you also had to be as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true, because you no longer just write a book and then have somebody publish it and make you a billionaire. You know what I mean? It just doesn't really happen like that anymore.
No.
You have to hustle. you know, and it's not just writers who have to hustle. I mean, there are companies who have been around for decades and they still have to hustle to get their custom because there is so much noise.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much noise and there's so much like competition for people's attention. You know, people are constantly scrolling, constantly like absorbing loads of information. And if you want to get through, then you have to hustle a lot. And I have to admit, I'm not so great on the hustling part. I'm kind
me
of like,
either.
Oh, I'm written now. There you are. You know, people will find it if they're supposed to. I mean, it doesn't matter. but yeah, I think as long as you just keep doing it, then it doesn't really matter. You just keep trying new things and, you know, keep doing what you love doing.
I remember Cheryl Richardson saying at a Movers and Shakers thing, event I went to with her back in 2010, they were Speak, Write, Promote. It was like helping authors or whatever else you wanted to do get started in what you're doing. And her best piece of advice right at the beginning was don't quit your day job, you know, and then find ways to do parts of it and then find which parts actually resonate with you and do those. And don't try to force yourself to do the things that just don't work for you or in the timing that doesn't work for you either.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of people think I'm a lot braver than I am, and it's not true. I mean, it takes me a lot of times I'll get an idea to do something. And like, for example, Blog Talk Radio, I originally signed up with Blog Talk Radio in, I think it's like 2009. And I didn't host my first show until the end of 2013 in December.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I think a lot of times people think that success, quote, success, or what people do happens overnight and that they don't have any fear. But one of the things that's so true is that whenever you try something new, you're going to feel some fear. And that's one of the reasons why I love that book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, because she points out that anytime you do something new, you're going to feel some fear, and then fear turns into resistance, and then you end up putting it off or, you know, do part of it and then finish it later or whatever. But I think it also, now this brings us into, we've only got, believe it or not, only got 17 minutes left. Can you believe it?
Oh, no.
Brings us into the idea of divine timing and then things happening when they're meant to happen, which leads me into your awesome little book, Where's My Effing Unicorn? A guide to life, your unicorn and everything. And I can't tell you how much I love that book. I love your Earth Angel series, and I do want to read them all over again. But boy, you know, that's a big commitment of time with 10 books. So I haven't done that yet, and I do intend to. But I've already read your unicorn book probably 3 times at least, and I'm just about finished with it again, just reading one little segment each day. And I love your sense of humor. I love the fact that you also bring up topics in there about why, and you call them self-help books. I like to think of them as personal development, but self-help books don't work. And one of the points that you make in there, and is so true, is you can't just either buy the book and put it on yourself or read the book and not do what it is. You know, it's not going to do any good. But I love that you go through all these different aspects of it in there. So tell the listeners a little bit about Where's My Effing Unicorn and your view of it.
Well, it's a funny thing. I mean, it's yet another example of something that I didn't do. So, okay, there's a bit of irony in it because for a long time I've kind of moaned a little bit about books that say, oh, write a book in a weekend and, you know, write a bestseller in a weekend and all this, you know, all these kind of books that promise that you can write this amazing book in a very short space of time, make tons of money, right? So I kind of moaned about those books because I was like, how ridiculous. Don't be daft, you know? And one Saturday morning back in 2016, I just had this, these ideas just streaming through. And I was doing the morning pages at that time as well. So I had a notebook and pen next to my bed. And I woke up, I grabbed the notebook and pen, and I wrote down all the subheadings that were in the unicorn book. And I also wrote down a blurb, and I wrote down the whole concept, and it was just streaming through. So I just wrote down as much as I could. And even though it's a Saturday, you know, obviously I work for myself, I've got my own business, so I had a massive to-do list, I had loads of work to do. So I kind of put the notebook to one side, was like, oh, that's a cool idea, I'll do that one day. And then kind of carried on about my day. But the ideas wouldn't leave me alone. Like literally the sentences were just forming in my mind and just, it was just writing itself in my head and it wouldn't let me kind of concentrate on anything else. So I basically said, all right, fine. I will write it. And I sat down at 11 o'clock in the morning and by 8 o'clock in the evening, almost the whole thing was done. And I, you know, I added a bit more to it on Sunday. And then obviously in its current incarnation, it's been, you know, it's changed a little bit and had things added and taken away. But essentially the book was created in a weekend and then, you know, sold a lot of copies. So then it was kind of ironic that I used to moan about books that promise things like that because it's unrealistic. But yeah, the unicorn book was very much, it was just pure kind of joy and exploration of this idea, you know, all these ideas that were streaming through. And they were all basically all of my kind of excuses and reasons for why, even though I'd read all the self-help books and I'd, you know, walked on fire and broken arrows with my neck and done all of these crazy things to supposedly improve and change my life at the time was still an absolute mess. Like there was just nothing was working. And I'm like, why? And I realized that I was a complete information junkie. I loved reading books and doing webinars and seminars and workshops. But I never actually took any action on any of the stuff that I learned. You know, I never actually did anything with it. So of course my life wasn't going to change. I didn't meditate. I didn't do affirmations. I didn't action any of it. So basically by writing the unicorn and pointing out all of these reasons and excuses, mainly to myself. I mean, at this point, I wasn't writing something that was going to be published. You know, I was just writing this idea that was coming through in my head. And yeah, by looking at all of these reasons and excuses, I then owned them. I was like, yeah, I do complain about stuff sometimes. And sometimes it's fun to complain about stuff. And I am a drama llama and I am an information junkie. And I just owned all of it. And by owning them all, suddenly they were no longer problems. They were no longer obstacles. They were no longer reasons not to change my life. And weirdly, as a result of writing the book, and then I did self-publish it and put it out there and everybody went crazy over it. And then it got picked up by a publisher. And obviously now in its current incarnation, it's, you know, it's been published traditionally. And yeah, it's like that. None of that I could have ever predicted at that point on that Saturday when I said, okay, I'll write it. You know, it was literally, I did it for the pure hell of it. And as a result of writing it, publishing it, my life did improve quite a lot because I then owned my, you know, my faults, I guess, you know, my flaws. And none of it was a problem anymore. I was just like, yep, this is me. This is how it rolls. You know, let's just do things anyway. And JFDI, you know, just F and do it, was a big part of the book. And the book was born because of that kind of attitude of like, oh, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to get it done. And then I can get on with my day. and this is the thing, that the magic happens when you're busy trying to do all the stuff that doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I love it. I totally love it. I mean, definitely right away, even just the first version that you had. But this version with the hardcover version with the picture, the illustrations are delightful in this book.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I've worked with my husband Dudley in the graphic design business of his and photography business all the way since I started part-time in his business with him in 1985.
Wow.
And so, you know, and one of the reasons I liked working with him in it was when we started being able to do layout of books on the computers and books and newsletters and putting together the images and the graphics and the colors and the fonts and everything is really fun. My point being, whoever did the layout and the illustrations in this is just pure genius. It just... I love the way that they've bolded out things. I love the way that the titles are, the illustrations of the unicorn doing the various things that go with the excuses.
My favorite is the devil unicorn. and the Drama Llama. The Drama Llama is brilliant.
Yeah, the Drama Llama is that's toward the end of the book, and that's I think that was that was the last one I read just yesterday, and I was thinking about that, and I was going to read the next two, and then I thought, I want to talk to Michelle about this whole Drama Llama idea because it, you know, for me, people I think, I can't remember which one of them it was about going prancing around singing happy songs, but, you know, I think that that's the way people see me, and that's kind of what I like to do, but it's really true that, I mean, if there's no drama at all, then there's no contrast, and then there's no story, really. And but it's a whole different thing. If you're, I think what you said was so true, though. If you get too into drama, either in your own personal life or watching it, that it becomes a distraction. So, you know, then you don't end up doing anything either.
Yeah, we can use the drama as an excuse. And this is, and yet if you accept that, you know, as a creative person, as a writer, if you accept that drama is just a part of your life, because without the drama, what stories do you have to tell? Then you're no longer then resenting and resisting the drama, you know, for causing your problems, because there's got to be part of you that's thinking, well, actually, this will be a great scene in a book one day. And I've collected quite a few of those. There's several stories of really crazy things that have happened to me. And I'm like, it'll be in a book one day. And I always warn people, like, you know, who are friends with me, just be careful, because, you know, I write books and people end up in my books. so I think, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with being a drama llama. And in fact, my editor, Liz, and I are actually co-writing the next self-help book or self-development book. And it is llama related.
And it's
so,
what?
It's llama related.
Oh, llama related.
Yes, it is llama related. So so yes, we do plan to have that out by Christmas, because we want to explore topics like self-esteem and confidence and all those, you know, things like that through this kind of like llama concept, basically. So so yes, look out for the Drama Llamas coming at the end of the year.
That's so funny, because I got stuck on that one page, and like I said, I'd been, or one section, and I had been doing one, I don't know if you call them chapters or whatever, but per day, and each one of them is short, so the whole book's not very long. You can read it really quickly if you want to, but what I love is just reading one of them per day and thinking about what those excuses are that maybe are stopping you, or in my case, it also helps me think about what might be stopping my coaching clients, you know? So, I find it really, really helpful, and I highly recommend the book, and now I'm curious to read the Llama book later when it comes out as well.
Yeah, we're still working on it, because we keep coming up with new things like, oh, we need to talk about this in the Llama book, so it's probably going to end up a little bit longer than we were kind of anticipating, but yeah, it should be quite fun. I think the most surprising thing for me with the unicorn is that obviously I was writing about my excuses. Everything in that book was like mine. You know, I owned all of those things. And the number of people who read it and was like, I'm exactly the same, you know, and it kind of surprised me just how many other people had the exact same issues or problems or excuses going on.
I could relate to, I don't know for sure about all of them, and because we only have a few minutes left, I don't want to get into all of them, but yeah, I could definitely relate to a lot of them. The information junkie, I'm more of an idea junkie. I love ideas and creativity.
Oh, yes. I love ideas.
And so, I mean, actually, that's something that you could probably write about a lot too, the idea junkie, but then, also, I can't remember which one it was where you talked about, inspired me to watch the video of Neil Donald Walsh's about the universe only says yes.
That
is so powerful, because if you start thinking about what you say in life, and then the universe is going, yes, you do put things off, or yes, you do are afraid to do this or whatever, and
it just agrees with you. Everything you say agrees, and
so when you start looking at beliefs, for example, that way, and you're going, oh, I'm not enough, and the universe goes, yes, you're not enough.
Whereas if you, yeah, by just, and that's where affirmations come in. And I think, you know, the thing with affirmations is that people feel like they're being false or they're not being authentic, because they're saying things that they know aren't true. And so what I find to be the easiest way around that is to pick something to affirm that is partly true or that is true. So you start with something small, you know, so you could pick something like, oh, I'm capable of doing this thing. Oh, yeah,
right.
I really am capable of doing this thing. And then you can kind of almost build on that because, I mean, I find, for, as an example, like, you obviously owning my own business and freelancing, as soon as I start going, oh, my God, work is coming from all directions and I can't keep up, work comes from all directions and I can't keep up.
Exactly.
You know, as soon as I start saying it a lot, and the thing is, I'm not saying it because I'm trying to create the work. I'm saying it because it's true. And I think when we feel that something is true, we will attract more of it. And it's the feelings underneath what you're saying that really attracts more of you know, what you're saying. And I think, if we can feel abundant about the money that we have and say, wow, I'm so blessed to have the money that I have, you know, I have enough, and whatever it is, if what we're saying is true and we feel it's true and we're like, you know, radiating that truth, then it's a lot easier to attract than more of what we're talking about. And
that gets into gratitude, which you're in that group with me about the book, The Magic, about the gratitude. And it's so important. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Michelle, for being on the show, for example. You know?
Thank you for having me. I can't believe it's like so gone so fast.
Oh, I know. And thank you, thank you, thank you for writing your books. You know, I mean,
well,
I'm definitely going to reread the Earth Angel books, but you know, this one is just so amazing too, though, all the things in it, and your creativity is just amazing. We've got 3 minutes left, so what would you like to leave our audience with?
I think don't be afraid to take time now to create things that could, you know, create amazing ripples of things to happen in the future. I mean, sitting down on that Saturday morning at the end of September in 2016, I had no idea that I was going to write a book that would take me on the journey that it's taken me on in the last 3 years. I genuinely had no idea, but I was willing to sit down and take the time out of my day to create it at that moment. And I think, yeah, when we worry too much about how something's going to turn out or what the outcome will be or whether it'll be good enough or whether it's worth it, we kind of then kill off or scare away the creative side and the muse, you know, whereas if we just trust and go, I've got this inspiration, I've got this idea, I'm just going to do it right now. I have no idea where it's going to take me, but I'm going to trust that it'll take me somewhere good or somewhere fun or somewhere crazy. And just, yeah, so don't, you know, be afraid to just sit down and JFDI and just do something.
Okay, yeah, so JFDI, explain what that is.
Oh, it's in the Unicorn book, it's just effing do it.
Yeah, just effing do it.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's another one of the chapters that I love. It's got to be perfect.
And it really doesn't, you know, nothing is perfect, and that's the brilliance of it. You know, everything's perfect in its imperfection, and so really don't worry about whether you're creating a masterpiece or a mess, but just if an inspiration is coming to you or an idea has come to you, just jump on it. Just go with it. Just do it, because we're all connected to the collective consciousness, and if an idea or inspiration comes to you from that collective consciousness and you don't do it, it'll move on to someone else and find somebody else who is listening and who will do it.
Exactly.
You know? So because it wants to be like created, it wants to be heard, it wants to be seen and felt. So it's going to find somebody who's listening. And, you know, if you get that inspiration, just go for it.
Yeah, just do it. And, oh, Michelle, thank you, thank you, thank you for listening to your spirit and writing these books. I am so thankful for you and your friendship and for teaching us about Earth Angels. It's been fun, again, having you on the show, and I'm already looking forward to the next time to have you on the show.
Yes, definitely. Thank you so much. Yeah, we always have too much fun.
Yeah. So So thank you for living your music. Everyone out there, live your music. Share the show and get people to do what they've always dreamed of doing, what they've been afraid to do. Let them just do it. Just F.
Yeah.
What was it? Just effing do it.
Yep. J-F-D-I.
Bye for now, Michelle. Bye for now, everyone. Live your music.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Speak to you soon. Bye, Margo.
Bye.